any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started. HomeAdvisor.
Ahead of the State of the Union address, President Trump has decided to speak out about several military issues. After the president said sending U.S. troops to Venezuela was an option on the table, Margaret Brennan, on CBS's Face the Nation, asked him if he would personally negotiate with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to convince him he should leave office.
Well, he has requested a meeting, and I've turned it down because we're very far along in the process. You have a young and energetic gentleman, but you have other people within that same group that have been if you talk about democracy, it's really democracy in action.
He also said he wanted to leave U.S. forces in Iraq so he could keep a close eye on Iran. He also claimed that Defense Secretary James Mattis resigned because he told him to do it. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
The New England Patriots are champions of the National Football League once again.
Yes! It's still a dynasty!
The call on the Patriot Radio Network as they beat the Los Angeles Rams 13-3. For most of the game, it was a defensive struggle. The score was tied 3-3, then midway through the fourth quarter, Patriot quarterback Tom Brady took over and led the Patriots on a 67-yard drive. That ended by a 2-yard touchdown run by Sony Michel that proved to be the game-winning score. The Patriots added a field goal at the very end. New England wins their 6th Super Bowl championship. Ram fans were disappointed, but Patriot fans were ecstatic.
Oh, 6, baby! 6, that's all I got to say.
Go Pats! Heck yeah! Brady number 6!
President Trump may face challenges within his own party in 2020. USA's Rick Vincent reports.
Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld plans to headline Politics and Eggs in New Hampshire in 2 weeks, a must-stop for White House hopefuls. And Maryland Governor Larry Hogan expressed interest this week to CNN.
I'm not protesting every day about every issue, but when I stand up and certainly let people know when I disagree or when I think something is going on that I don't think is right.
And an email this week by former Ohio Governor John Kasich's political group reminded supporters that many have suggested Governor Kasich should run, and he is keeping all of his options on the table. For USA Radio News, I'm Rick Vincent.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And for the weather today, after that snow day yesterday with the wacky snow and ice and rain and weather, today we've got a high of 37, sunny, then slight chance of snow showers 20% later. A low of 25, sunny again tomorrow, high of 42, so it's warming up. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, low of 34. On Friday, we've got a chance of showers again, but a high of 51. And then for Friday night, chance of showers, and then a slight chance of more rain and snow, wintry mix with the low of 31. And then Saturday, again, chance of rain and snow with a high of 36.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio. And we are broadcasting on Facebook Live today. If you want to check it out, the page is called Happy to Help, or you can search for it at Happy Hunterdon. And today I'm very excited to welcome my guest. My guest is Juan No Usadi. Welcome, Juan.
Thank you.
Talk closer to the microphone, Lissy. Let's sit.
Talk to the microphone.
There
okay.
you go.
Does it
okay.
work?
Yeah, right. it works. All okay, right. great. All right. And Juan is the author of an incredible memoir. It was listed as one of the top memoirs of 2018, and it's called Of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches, and it's the story of her immigration from Vietnam as a young girl. And we're going to talk about the book, and we're going to read excerpts from the book, but first I want Juan, if you just give us kind of a little bit of background of who you are and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much, Nicole, for having me on your program. You know, Happy to Help message of volunteerism, of finding meaning and happiness through helping and sharing with others is really inspiring. But I have to say, in the few short months that we've known each other, you are the embodiment of that. Right. Besides Happy to Help, you're a big advocate of Room to Read,
yep.
a nonprofit organization that promotes literacy all around the world. And I think that's where we first connected with each other, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, because I Room to Read is my passion. And when I read your memoir, it was incredible. And then also the fact that you're from Vietnam and that Vietnam happens to be a country where Room to Read works, I thought we definitely should meet.
Right. And really, ever since then, it's been a roller coaster ride.
It's been
fun. Events with Nicole.
So. I know, right? Well, I didn't even realize our kids are the same age. Our kids go to school together, but we were just running in different circles. But then your book exploded in town, and you've been booked back to back visiting book clubs, and it's been fun.
All right.
But you were not a writer. You decided to write. Why? What happened that made you decide to start writing?
You know, I always loved reading. I love pretty sentences, and I especially loved memoirs. And I have to say, I came to writing by accident and late in life. 8 years ago, my father passed away, and I was very upset with that, and so I decided to write something about his life. And I had never really written seriously before, so it took me a while. And so 5 years ago, it was finally finished after, 3 years, I decided to send it to different newspapers, and the Wall Street Journal picked it up and published it for Father's Day in 2003.
Incredible.
2013, right.
Okay.
And yeah, the editor, who was very kind afterwards, advised me that perhaps, there was more to the story and I should consider writing the memoir, a book. And so that's what I did. So
that's incredible. I mean, just you write this heartfelt essay, and like you said, the Wall Street Journal picks it up. Like, that's just a dream come true. It's just, it's incredible.
Right.
And worthy, though. I mean, if you've read the article, and then you've since been published in the Washington Post for Thanksgiving, right? Wasn't that the latest one?
Right.
And your book, like I said, your book has won awards, and you've been featured, and so it's not that hard to hang out with you and follow your success. So very excited to hear about you. So tell us a little bit about the book writing process. So your essay had some success, and they encouraged you to write a book. And then how do you even start, like, formulating your ideas and putting things together? Because I think people need to know that it isn't super easy to write a book, right? It takes work.
Yeah, right. It does take work. And I think, the editor who sort of became my mentor, and he was very kind, and he offered me advice. And I think the two pieces of advice that he offered that really stayed with me was that the first one was that writing is really work. And, people often think that writers write when they feel inspired, but it's really not that. You write whether you like it or not, and it should be something you do every day. Mm-hmm. And then the second advice he gave me was that you should have a target number of, words that you write every day. It could be 1,000 words, 500 words, and maybe in my case, 300 words. And so I really took that to heart, and every day I really tried to do that. But the thing about that was never ending. So every night I go to sleep feeling very anxious because the next day it starts all over again. It's a groundhog day for however, let's say, almost 2 years that it took me to write the first draft of the book. So
That's great. And I mean, if it is a heartfelt story, and then you got different people to help you with editing and reactions and things like that, right? It's a process.
Right. It is a process. And, you know, writing, I think it does take a leap of faith. You have to believe that what's in your head is worth writing and worth being read and being shared, you know. But you spend so much of the day holed up in, by yourself, thinking and trying to articulate that often towards the end of the day, you swing to the other side and you think, geez, this is really bad, you know. Why would anybody want to hear this? Why am I doing this, you know? And so it's really important to get another set of eyes, another, just somebody else to tell you, to give you, to read it and to think about it and to give an honest assessment. And so the closest people that I could think of were the people who happened to live with me, my three children and husband. And they were very helpful. And my husband, you know, who helped me on the weekends. And with the children, and they were from elementary school through, you know, beginning of high school. I would beg them after school every day to just please, you know, just sit down and just read this passage that I spent the last, you know, 2-3 weeks working on. And most of the time they comply, you know, they understand, you know, just do that and she'll be much nicer after. And, you know, and in a sense is that unvarnished honesty, you know, that they just want to get to the next thing. That's really helpful. You know, all three of them have a problem with something, then I know that the story doesn't work. And so, you know, it took me 2 or 3 weeks, but it just had to be reworked or even deleted completely. So
yeah, well, I'd be interested to hear what a fifth grader's reaction would be, right? Did he? Because he was your youngest, right?
So
did
he? So yeah, you know, and actually, he offered very helpful advice. He would say, you know, I don't think, you know, fifth grader, you know, would say something like that, you know. So I'm thinking maybe the voice is not of where I was when I was his age. The voice is what I am now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I also understand something, that Berners Township schools are wonderful because as they, you know, went through the schools, the advice they offered me was really – It got much, much better and much, much more thoughtful. And they would say, you know, we learned this in English. You know, you shouldn't use this. You know, just don't even, you know, you shouldn't use adjectives. So frankly, you shouldn't use adverbs either, that, you know, that much.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I really learned a lot. And I would like to thank the English teachers for being a big help with my book.
Hail to the teachers. Yes. They do a lot. I know I couldn't do it for sure. So, so tell us about, so you were about, take us through the basic premise of the book, because so why don't you just give us the overall synopsis, and we're going to dive into some more excerpts later.
Sure. So the book is told through the eyes of a young girl. It's about my growing up in under communist Vietnam, our family escape on a small boat, and our arrival in a small Texas town in the mid 1980s. So the book is breaking down in three parts. You know, Vietnam, the boat escape, refugee camps, and America. And each part is, there's a theme to it. I guess in Vietnam, I wanted to convey the idea of what life was like there after South Vietnam collapsed. And, you know, in America, you know, people didn't know much about Vietnam right after the last American left. But, you know, life still went on there. And so the sense of desperation that would compel a family like ours to risk everything to leave. Mm-hmm. And the second part talked about the boat trip and, you know, what life was like in refugee camps. I think for many people who've never had that experience, it's eye-opening, you know. Refugee camps, you know, it's not a fun place in any sense. But for a kid, you know, it's not all dire and sad. You know, that there are many moments of happiness, not just for me, but for other kids, you know. And then in America, what was like the sense of going to this country that we've heard so much about, you know, this land that was so different from what we've all known. And so that sense of wonder and the struggle to find a footing in the new place. So the book, the third part of the book conveys that.
Wow, it's an incredible book. I've read it. I need to read it again because there's certain parts that I don't remember as well, and it's definitely worth a reread over and over. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Juan.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. We're back with Juan Nosati. We're on Happy to Help, and we're on Facebook Live today if you want to check us out. And her her book is Of Monkey Bridges and Bonnie Sandwiches. So if you have a book club, you need to add this to the list because it's really good. You can get it on Amazon, and it's an incredible book. It's a story of immigration, which we know is in the news nonstop these days. And it's an incredible book about her story coming to America. But I also think it's interesting that you were a refugee twice because you talk about being a refugee first within your own country, which people don't realize there's so many displaced refugees within their own country of origin because you left the city of Saigon and were moved to the countryside where you were not accepted readily, right?
No. You know, so my parents own an auto parts shop in Saigon, and after the communists took over, private enterprises were banned, and so we were forced to go to the countryside. And in one of the excerpts I'm going to read, that it shows the sense of being an outsider, you know, in that small village, the rice-farming village. We were not accepted at all. We were...
City folk.
We were city folk, you know, that people that didn't know anything about farming. And really, that's what the only skills that mattered.
Right. And I just want to touch on the title of it because I think it's so fun. Can you tell us what a monkey bridge is and what a banh mi sandwich is?
Sure. The book is called Of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches. I guess monkey bridges and banh mi sandwiches are two iconic images that spans the world of my childhood, Vietnam and America. A monkey bridge is a very iconic image of the countryside of Vietnam. It's usually made of one bamboo rod spanning a stream or river. And the countryside of Vietnam is just filled with waterways, canals, rivers, ponds. And so the stories that in the first part of my book is the stories of monkey bridges of this, and, you know, on a larger level, the stories of Vietnam. And then the banh mi sandwich is very representative of our first days in America. My parents opened a sandwich shop. And a banh mi is a French baguette with a very thin, crispy crust filled with roasted meat and fresh vegetables. And so the working at the shop, helping out my parents, that those memories dominate my childhood. And so the stories in the book, you know, are the stories of the monkey bridges and of banh mi sandwiches of Vietnam, of America, the two pillars of my childhood.
It's an incredible story. It really is. And I think people are hungry for more now, hungry for Bon Me and for the book. So if you want to, do you want to read a couple of the excerpts starting?
Okay. Yes. So I will just the I'll read the excerpts, but before each, I will give an introduction and I'll just give some background and some context to the excerpts. So I will it'll be an arc through the book if it's okay.
Perfect.
Okay. So in 1975, when I was four, the Civil War in Vietnam ended. An interesting side note: in America, this war is called the American War, but it's called the Vietnam War. But in Vietnam, it's called the American War. So, in 1975, after 30 years of bloodshed, North Vietnam, which was communist, had defeated the South, and Vietnam was reunited as one country under communist rule. As I mentioned earlier, before the communist takeover, my parents were owners of an auto parts business in Saigon, the capital of South Vietnam, and where I was born. But under communism, private enterprises of any kind were considered immoral and outlawed. So the communist government shut down my parents' business and confiscated our house, and we were ordered to leave the city to learn to farm. It was either jail or exile. When I was eight, my family moved to a remote rice farming village in the city. And as Nicole, you mentioned earlier, this is our first, my first experience as a refugee and as an immigrant in
within your own country, right?
Right, within my own country. So the excerpt I'm about to share with you describes our new home in this in the countryside. Our hut, like all others, had no address. Okay, good. Okay. Our huts, like all others, had no address. The paths leading to it, the muddy tapestries of human and farm animal footprints, had no names. There was no need for names, as our village had few visitors, no mail, electricity, or indoor plumbing. We had no soap or toothpaste. In fact, we had little other than what nature offered. Everyone except us was related or otherwise connected to each other in some way. The villagers didn't care much for the outsiders from the big city. Everything about us, our accent, our clothes, our shoes, the fact that we wore shoes, and particularly our untanned skin, set us apart and told them all that they needed to know. We had never toiled under the sun and had little idea how to farm or fish, which were the only skills that matter in a place surrounded by rivers and ponds, rice fields and orchards. The villagers were right. Our family knew little about life in the countryside. Besides my father, none of us even knew how to swim.
That's incredible. It's a perfect description of your transition, right? And the wonder and the uncertainty of getting to this new place, right?
Exactly. And the sense of we are really immigrants into this place, this Vietnam, but we were strangers to it. We didn't know anything about it. You know, it's the same of displacement I felt once again when we came to America, some years later.
Right, so. And it's funny you mentioned skin color because, it's just so funny how people judge so quickly based on, skin color everywhere, all over the world.
Everywhere, all around the world.
I know.
Yeah, in the countryside, that was really set us apart,
Yeah, so. That's crazy. All right, so your next one?
So in the countryside, like the businessmen in the cities who could no longer own their own businesses, the farmers in the countryside couldn't own their own land. Under the communist policy called collectivized farming, the farmers had to turn over all their land to the government. And actually, not just their land, but all their property, including the water buffaloes that plow the soil. So people were supposed to work together on these communal fields, and at harvest, the crop would be distributed equally according to each family's needs. So in theory, that was supposed to be how things were. But in practice, things didn't work out like that. So people were very angry and resentful. Many would rather destroy their equipment and slaughter their buffaloes than to turn it over to the government. And with no incentive for working hard, not many people exerted the effort. And so it came as no surprise that rice production kept falling at each harvest, and food shortage became a real issue when we were there. Our family had some savings, and so we could afford to buy extra food, but most of the people around us, most of the villagers, had no savings. And so things became really difficult. In this excerpt, I'm going to describe the desperation that I witnessed all around us. We were all hungry, but from the sunken eyes of my neighbors, I sensed a hunger much different from mine, a deprivation that compelled neighboring children to steal and drink a whole jar of liquid pork fat, as I happened to witness one day. Finding enough food to eat just for the day, maybe the next, was the driving force for everyone's action. People combed the grounds for snakes, mice, rats, anything that moved. Within a few years of our arrival in the countryside, birds, bats, snakes, all disappeared. Even the once abundant trout fish became scarce. These huge, energetic fish lived in ponds beneath outhouses, consuming waste. When abundant, they turned upward, piling on top of each other with their mouths open every time the outhouse was used. They lunged at anything that came down, even rocks. In the beginning, when we first moved to the countryside, I was terrified to go to the bathroom with them lurching in the waters below. But in time, I got used to them and even found them entertaining. Not long ago, none of us would think to eat them. But when we stopped catching other kinds of fish, we turned to the still plentiful source of protein. My father was the first in a family to taste it. At first, I could not suppress the image of their churning open mouths. Soon, I stopped making the association altogether. As food became scarce, we wasted nothing. Not the chickens that suddenly falling ill, dropping dead on top of each other. Sauteed, fried, boiled, the mounted meat transformed into mouth-watering dishes. I dug into the rare abundance, pushing away the unrelenting thought that the chicken's fate might befall all of us.
Oh my gosh, your writing is so good. I just must say, the story is incredible, but your writing is really exceptional as well. And I think most of us just can't even imagine being hungry at that level. I mean, we live in abundance. We definitely do.
Right. I think when, you know, it's hard to say what we do when things become so desperate, you know, and so I perhaps having gone through that, I come away even doubting my own self, you know, like to say with certainty what I would do in any circumstance. It's very, very hard to say. The instinct to survive is very, very strong, you know. And so given that, I guess it's give lends more of a sympathy and empathy for others. Yeah,
I fully agree that nobody has the right or the option of judging until you've walked a mile in their shoes.
Right.
Really. Great. Let's go on to the next one.
Okay. So as things became worse, the villagers found a scapegoat in our family, the outsiders in the big city. My brothers and I were taunted at school. My father was taken hostage at gunpoint. Our house was robbed by armed men at night. So finally, my parents decided that we had no choice but to escape. They didn't make this decision lightly because they knew the risks involved. If we were caught by the police, the adults would be jailed. Our house would be confiscated. On the boat at sea, there were storms and pirates, these savage thugs preying on desperate refugees, not only to rob, but also to kidnap young girls to sell. You know, it's funny that growing up, I had always assumed that the words Thai and pirates go together. It was only much later in America that I found out that the word Thai could be followed by words like food or restaurant. So this next excerpt describes a scene during our escape out of Vietnam on the South China Sea. Dian, wake up. I heard my father's voice as his hand frantically ran fast over my face, neck, and arms. It was our third night on the boat. Immediately, I realized what was happening. Before the escape, my mother had put a few pieces of coal in my shirt pockets. She had warned me to rub the coal all over my face and arms if we encounter pirates. Make yourself as ugly as you can, she had emphasized. I took out the coal and joined my father, smearing it all over myself. The sharp-edged coal scraped against my sun-pilled skin. Then I curled up on his lap, wrapping my arms around his chest. With his heart pounding against my ear, I strained to make sense of the chaos around me. Amidst the shouting I heard, the ship's just passed. It's not pirates. It's not pirates. As more people called out the same message, my father's arms around me loosened. In the dim light, I looked up to see the familiar dimpled smile, only now mixed with undeniable relief.
Oh, my gosh. It's just heart-wrenching. Oh. Is that the end of that one?
That is the end of this excerpt.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And then, right, I mean, so. And also the whole passage of leaving and deciding to come, it's not an easy decision for anybody. I mean,
it's not an easy, right. In as much as America beckons us, you know, whatever we experienced in at home, you know, but for somebody to decide to leave their home, to leave everything they know, you know, and to be a refugee, people don't take that risk lightly, because the journey, wherever it might be, you know, whether emanating from Vietnam or any parts of the world, is undoubtedly a very perilous journey for an unknown land.
It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. It's a survival of the fittest at a new level, right?
Right. Or it's not for the ones who are comfortable where they are, you know. Yeah. They got to be some desperation, something to drive people to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. You got another one?
Sure. So this. So after 3 nights and 3 days at sea, our boat landed in Malaysia. So I'm giving a bit away from, the book. You know that we made it.
I think we know you made it.
You know that we made it? Okay. So for the next year, we stay in different refugee camps. The first two were in Malaysia. The last one was in the Philippines. And this is after we had already been accepted to America. Everybody was very excited. The feeling, the atmosphere around in the Philippines was much more cheerful and hopeful than it was in Malaysia. So in the refugee camp in the Philippines, we learned English and American culture. And so I like to read a small excerpt about that. So as much as we struggled with the English lessons, we really enjoy the cultural trainings. What to do in America? The theme dominated our role-playing sessions. We learned what to expect at school, how to navigate around a supermarket, how to put coins into a vending machine, something I had never heard of. It seemed unbelievable that there was a contraption with an endless supply of candies that could drop down with a few coins and a push of a button. One time, our teacher promised to bring a breakfast food for us to taste. The idea of our teacher having enough food for the entire class was as strange as the concept of eating in class. We couldn't wait for the treat. When the day arrived, the round little wheels, dry and tasteless, underwhelmed us all. In America, I would find out that our teacher was right. Cereal tasted much better with fresh cow milk.
Isn't that funny? Well, then you say, too, they would talk about this weird round food that you cut into triangles, right? That was pizza or something.
That was right. I mean, everything was, you know, strange. Yeah. Hot dogs, hamburgers, you know. Yeah. And meanwhile, as she pointed from one food after the other, all we wanted to know was, well, where's the rice, you know.
Yeah.
This rice is such an integral part of the Vietnamese diet that we just couldn't imagine that there could be a meal without some form of rice, you know.
Right, and didn't you say the Vietnamese word for dinner is rice, or eat rice, or something like that?
The Vietnamese word for not just dinner, for any meal, is rice. You know, when you say, you come visit somebody, have you say, the question, well, Vietnamese love eating, so eating and rice just go together.
Yeah.
So people, you know, the question would be, have you eaten rice? You know,
yeah.
But it could mean anything. Have you had something to eat?
Oh, so, okay. Right. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Right.
So, yeah, food's big. Yep.
So we arrived in America when my father was 57 and my mother was 51, with 5 children still living at home. With a small, very limited budget, finding a place to rent wasn't easy. And in our small Texas town, many landlords made clear that they didn't want Vietnamese immigrants as tenants. But my parents finally found a landlord who agreed to rent to us. Overweight and gruff, he used a wheelchair to get around. He had a really thick Texas accent and a gravelly voice from years of smoking, which made his speech impossible to understand for us, you know, with very little English. His name was Walter, but with our English, with our very untrained ears, we really couldn't hear the L in the middle. So we ended up calling him Mr. Water and his wife Mrs. Water. Everything about him scared me. But somehow I got the job of being the interface between our two families, and I had to interact with him quite a bit. These interactions were a big source of stress for me in my childhood. So I like to read a little excerpt about that. On the first of every month, my father handed me an envelope with a $300 check inside. It was my job to run across the yard to place a wrench in a very specific place. Not against the back door, not in the mailbox, but in their hands, my father said each time. I was the deliverer not only of wrench, but also of messages whenever something in our house broke. The circumstances might differ each time I ran over, but the question my father wanted me to include was always the same, who pay? I dreaded these who pay missions. I had to use my limited English to explain mechanical complications that I did not fully understand. There was often much back and forth and guessing on my part. Since Mrs. Water deferred most home maintenance questions to her husband, I ended up talking primarily to Mr. Water, fearful that his anger might erupt at my next request to repeat something. I sometimes just filled in the gaps with whatever I thought might make sense. Over time, I detected a pattern in Mr. Water's response to the who pay question. If something broke and he thought we were responsible, then we would pay. If we were clearly not at fault, then he would pay despite the initial resistance, though typically not for a new appliance, but only for parts my brothers could use to fix or replace whatever was broken. But often the question of responsibility was not so clear-cut, as in the toilet that clogged one too many times. Was it because it was old and prone to clogging when there was a lot of rain, as we reasoned? Or was it because of overuse from too many people, as he countered? While talking to Mr. Water, even in a straightforward situation, I kept on expecting his wrath, as I could never make myself fully understood. He always wanted to know more than what I knew how to explain. Sensing his agitation rising, I would grow more flustered, my English sounding increasingly like Vietnamese. In mid-conversation, he sometimes abruptly put up his hand. I understood the none-too-subtle signal that he had had enough of my explanation. I just have to see for myself what happened, he said, clamping his hands over the wheels, then rolling his chair fast toward our house. It was my cue to rush ahead to alert everyone of his arrival.
I know, it's comical, but it's, you know, you can sense the frustration, right?
Right, the frustration on everybody's part. Yeah. No, you know, we were an alien to him, and he was an alien to us.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, just learning to speak English, period, but with a heavy Texas drawl, it's a whole other language in and of itself.
Oh, exactly.
Right? Oh, my gosh. And then, so there were five children that came over, but then you've got a few older siblings that were...
Sure. I came over with my parents and older brother. So there was me, my brother. And then I had three siblings who were already in America. They had escaped Vietnam 2 years earlier.
Okay.
So my older siblings, well, they were college age. So they didn't stay in his house too long.
Okay.
So after a few years, Mr. Water did have the number of tenants he wanted. Back to just my parents and then two other, tenants.
Okay.
So do we have time for
more
reading?
Yeah, definitely.
So the adjustment in America was hard for all of us, but especially for my parents, finding work with a constant battle. My father, the serial entrepreneur in Vietnam, decided to try his luck by opening a Vietnamese banh mi shop. He named it Budget Sandwiches. He had seen the word budget on the side of some truck and thought it would make a great name for a food place. But in our town, apart from the small Vietnamese community, few had tasted or even knew what a banh mi was. Still, my father would joke that he would give McDonald's a run for his money. But as it turned out, the Golden Arches down the street had nothing to fear. Working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and half a day on Sunday, we barely broke even. Throughout middle school and high school, I often came to the shop to help. This excerpt is about the place that in my mind remains inseparable from my father. In the beginning, I did not bother to hide my resentment for working at the shop, even as I was aware that no one was forcing me to be there and that I had volunteered over my father's objections. Selling sandwiches might have been my father's priority, but it wasn't mine. I knew we needed customers, yet I resented their demands and mostly just preferred them to stay away. I think there's someone heading toward us, my father announced. It was 20 minutes before closing time. Still, my father sounded hopeful. I stopped what I was doing to look at the figure heading toward us. I was also filled with hope, but of the opposite kind from my father's. Ma, he turned. He's not coming to us. I'm going to turn the sign over, okay? I said. My father glanced at the clock, then at me. He let out a chuckle and nodded. Before long, I would stop informing my father altogether. If I saw anyone heading toward us while we were cleaning up, I would quickly turn the sign over to closed. Over time, I noticed my father's enthusiasm also waned. Our initial closing time at 8 p.m. moved to 7:30, then 7. At night, the work from the shop followed us home. In between homework, my siblings and I would take turns shredding carrots, whipping mayonnaise, slicing up old baguettes to make toast. My mother would stand by the stove roasting meat, preparing food that she could not do in the small space at the shop. My father would be at the kitchen table paying bills or going for inventory. Each day ground into the next in the continuous scramble to eke out a living. So relentless was the struggle that in exhaustion, my mother would sometimes grumble aloud what was harder, running budget or escaping Vietnam. It was a hyperbole we all understood for a sentiment we all shared.
Oh, my gosh, I love that. Well, and you have a bunch of stories about the shop, too, some really good ones. I remember several of them. But because, yeah, back then, people didn't – there was a little diaspora community, right,
in Vietnamese. Yeah. But a lot of Vietnamese immigrants ended up settling along the Gulf Coast because of the climate that's very similar to Vietnam, and there's also the fishing and shipping industry. A lot of them were fishermen in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but in our small Texas town, there was a small Vietnamese community. And even though my father had grand plans for the shop of making the crossover to the mainstream, that never happened. And our customers remained mostly Vietnamese. And
yeah. Well, we should give a shout out to the incredible Vietnamese shop in Morristown, where right. we've gotten the banh mi
sandwiches.
It's called Saigon Subs.
Saigon. Saigon Sub or Cafe?
It's right near the train station in Morristown. It's called, if you Google it, Saigon Subs or Cafe Saigon or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly, it has the word Saigon in it, and the sandwiches there are terrific. And
Vaughn gives you her thumbs up on that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have one more, I think?
We have one more. Okay. And so we have time for that, Nicole?
Yeah, we'll have a time for that, and then we'll do our break.
So in America, every adult around me seems lost. I really wanted a connection to someone who looked like me but was also at ease in America. Then one day I turned on the TV. And I like to conclude the reading with this excerpt. Around me, every adult seemed to hover on the periphery of fitting in. I often wonder if it was possible for an adult who looked like me to be accepted as fully American. Then I found her. With a dark mane touching her shoulders and a voice combining authority and calmness, she came into our living room most weekends. Good evening. Welcome to NBC News. I'm Connie Chung. She intoned behind the anchor's desk. She looked to me like she could be my mother, but there she was on national TV, informing Americans what they needed to know. I traced the movement of her lips, deep red against the porcelain skin, mimicking them and repeating what I heard. No matter my attempts, my voice trailed hers as an imperfect echo. Until I heard Connie Chung's name, I had thought that the pairing of an American first name and an Asian last name could only be a jarring collision of sounds. A few of my Vietnamese friends had started calling themselves Anna, David, Kathy, to the barely concealed chagrin of those around. Just by uttering her name, Connie Chung dismissed this notion. The American public seemed enthralled with Connie, and so was I. It was in the dead of winter when the sandwich shop customers seemed as rare as Texas snow. I had finished my homework. With hours until closing time, I stumbled upon an idea. I picked out a crisp new sheet of paper and penned my first and only fan letter. Dear Miss Chung, I came to America a few years ago. I've learned English and much about the world from watching you. I just wanted to say thank you very much. For a long time, I kept the letter as I did not know where to send it. Then one day, I happened to see the address at NBC News and in magazine at the library. I mailed the letter with little idea whether it would get to its intended recipient. Weeks later, a big envelope arrived in our mailbox. My heart danced as I tore open the package bearing the logo of NBC. Inside was an autographed picture of Connie Chung, along with a note wishing me luck and encouraging me to do good work in school.
Oh, I love that. I've forgotten that part. That's great. Well, there's that saying that you hear people say, you cannot be what you cannot see, right? So they're encouraging women and celebrating women and women of color and different people and different walks of life and careers, just because it makes a difference, right?
It makes a huge difference. Yeah. You know, right. I didn't know anybody who was like me, who was, you know, who was not struggling, you know, who could speak. I didn't know any adult Asian who could speak English, you know.
Right.
It's only much later, and actually when I come here to New Jersey, that I see a lot of older Asian women, men speaking English. And to me, that was, you know, as you know, a wonder as much as seeing M&Ms, you know, for the first time, you know. So
yeah, there's a story about M&Ms in the book too, cute. So for you chocolate lovers out there. I think it is. It's just incredible, and yeah, here she is on the major stage. Like, there weren't many women anchors, much less you know an Asian woman anchor. Like, it's incredible. So, that's pretty. That's an exciting story, your starstruck story, right? And all right, well, like I said before, if you haven't read the book, you should get the book. It's called Of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches, and let's see. Did I do the other commercials? I don't even know where we are now. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll finish up. Okay.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help. We're back. I got so enthralled in the excerpts, I forgot to do the commercials, but we got them in there. And then really quickly, before we finish up with Juan, I want to invite everybody to the Laughs for Literacy. It's put on by Ha Ha for Humanity and Sweet Reads and Room to Read. It's February 28th. It's going to be at Willie McBride's Irish Pub and Restaurant in Branchburg. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. We're having a pizza buffet. The tickets, you can get them on Eventbrite. Search Sweet Reads Comedy on Eventbrite. And there's four incredible comedians coming on. They've been on Let's see, World Series of Comedy, DC Improv, the Greenwich Village Comedy Club, Broadway Comedy Club. So there's really good talent that's going to be there that night, and we're raising money for literacy and also there to have a good time. It's going to be a cash bar, and the tickets are $30 in advance and $40 at the door. But if you want a good night, a good excuse to get out and laugh and have some fun, that's Comedy Night on February 28th. So check it out. And now we're going to finish up with Juan. We got to read part of your book. If you want to read the whole book, order it on Amazon. Put it in the queue for your book club, because it's really an incredible story, and it captures your heart and gives people a glimpse into what it's like coming to a country where you don't know the language, you don't know the culture, you're starting fresh and scared, and can you talk a little bit about how that?
Sure, but I just have to say though that my story, it's hardly unique. Growing up, among friends and relatives, we all have Vietnamese friends and relatives. We all have one of these stories, everybody. And in a way, mine is mundane compared to everybody else's. No, because, despite the thirst and the hunger, and we made it safe. No one died on the boat. But there are others who suffered tremendously. Their lives lost at sea, their pirates, but even more than that, it's a story of that reflects the immigrant experience across America, not just Vietnamese, but many other groups. You can just substitute a different origin, the sense of leaving one's home, that sense of loss in a new homeland, the struggle to find a footing. We all can relate to that. And so I feel like it's in this age of such intense debate over immigration, the sharing of these stories really helps demystify the fear of immigrants and fosters understanding. So these kind of conversations, I believe, are important.
Absolutely, because I think we have so much to offer in terms of perspective and sharing feelings and family and hardships and growth. And I mean, that's what I think it's all about is growth and helping one another. Like I preach on this show all the time, it's about reaching out and walking in someone else's shoes, or just listening or extending a helping hand, or any of those things, just to realize that, A, you're not alone in this world, and B, we're all common in that we're all human beings, and we really have a lot to benefit from listening to each other and relating to one another.
Sure. And exotic is really a matter of perspective, First, for lots of my friends, my story is so exotic. For me, listening to friends who have been in town or in America for generations, I have friends who tell me, oh yeah, my kids went to the local elementary school. I went to local elementary school. My parents went to local elementary school. So, those kind of deep roots to me are just, mesmerizing, in their own ways. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. I think it just depends on the kind of person you are. And like a lot of people want nothing more than to leap out and tour the world and experience everything they can. And other people really find comfort in just kind of staying in their own circle and with the people they know. And that's fine too. You just kind of got to know who you are and go for it and own it. Like I always say, own it. And just embrace what comes to you, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
And so how do your kids feel about the book and the success? And are they excited for you?
They are excited for me, but on the other hand, kids are kids the same, for them, first and foremost, a mom, and moms are often, not so cool. And, they don't see me as me, the background. They just me as right now, So, it's,
right.
Yeah. But I think growing up, hearing all these stories of my background and relatives with the same background, it does instill in them a certain sense of appreciation for what America has done for our family, you know. And so that's my oldest daughter, she's at the Naval Academy, and that sense of she always wanted to do something to give back, and I think for her that's her way of doing that.
That's so amazing. Yeah. And we can't forget your husband, who has been the driving force and support and editing and technical support and everything. So shout out to Adam.
Okay, shout. Thank you, Nicole. In the car, I was telling, I was singing the praises of Adam, and Nicole was very tech in that. And yes, Adam, I have to say, he's been my as I mentioned in the acknowledgement of the book, my biggest fan, but also fiercest critic, you know. Sometimes, you know, it could be a little not as fierce, but overall, he helped me tremendously. He's the editor behind every word that I've ever published, and I can't imagine who I am today without having met and grown with Adam.
Yeah, that's so exciting. Well, it's great that you've got this, you've built this support network around you to get this thing published. Like, because like you said, it's not an easy task. Like everyone says, oh, I want to write a book or whatever, you know. But doing and saying and doing are two different things. But you've just it's been incredible to hear your story and watch your success. Yeah. And we wish you continued success. Where I'm kidnapped Juan and taken her to Princeton. Where you have an event at, they're having a local author event at the Princeton Library on March 2nd. I think it's a Saturday.
Yes, March 2nd.
Yes. So Juan's going to be there. Look up the Princeton Public Library and check that out. And if you want to come down and meet Juan or invite her to your book club, check us out. And well, do you have a website? No, you.
Yes, I do have a website. It's Juan OANH and AND. only.com. So it's oneandonly.com.
I love that. Play on words. It's cute.
Nicole, we just have 1 minute. Yep. You reminded me that, you know, writing a book is definitely not a solitary process, and even getting the word out for it. And I have to say that I haven't said this out loud, but I really appreciate this opportunity to send my deepest thanks to the earliest readers, and especially, you know, the friends in Baskin Ridge, you know, the who are so kind, who didn't know anything about the book, but give it a chance, you know, read it, and, you know, and spread the word all to friends and neighbors. And I deeply appreciate that very much.
Well done, Juan. And we'll have you on again. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Nicole.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Virginia's governor promises to remain in office despite widespread calls for his resignation. Ralph Northam is trying to distance himself from a racist photo in his 1984 medical school yearbook.
When I was confronted with the images yesterday, I was appalled that they appeared on my page, but I believe then and now that I am not either of the people in that photo.
Northam still faces a chorus of people calling for his resignation. He says he hadn't seen the yearbook until the picture surfaced on Friday. Republican House Speaker Kirk Cox says taking action against him may not be the best course.
And obviously on impeachment, that's a very high standard. And so I think that's why we've called for the resignation. We hope that's what the governor does.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.